Hi guys, and welcome to a new episode of KC Caffeine. My name is Jason, and we have a full house today because along with it being a while since we've recorded and the summertime and everything being great, it is also our 2-year anniversary. I have, as always, the left foot to my right foot, the yin to my yang, all of those things, Blue.
Hi y'all.
Blue's here. It's been a while. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Also here, the smartest person in Raytown that's not me or Blue. That will be Gabe.
I'm pointing at Scott. Stewie.
Stewie. Gabe.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Hello. Welcome. Thank you for welcoming me.
Join us.
And finally, a man that needs no introduction, the OG player. I wouldn't be in this podcast game if it was not for one... Mr. Stewie, he's the Triforce, the TJ to my Triforce.
How's it going, everybody? Good to be back.
How you been?
I've been good. I work a lot.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're not doing 12 years. You're not doing 12 years of slave anymore.
You're right. So. I'm down to one job, so I should show up more often.
Yeah. Well, you will be.
Got you. Got you now.
We're not D&D-ing.
You're KCN.
We're KCN. Wow. Yeah. So, the first thing that I wanted to talk about today, being that it is the 2-year anniversary, you know, 2 years ago, an idea that I had, I just want to get people together and talk about, like, what it feels like to be in this, I said to be woke and black in America, but really what it came down to was this idea that I live in a blue dot sandwiched between two red states.
Mm-hmm. And our blue dot is still, like, it's got some purple.
It's fuchsia, you know. Like periwinkle.
Right here is magenta.
Right.
But then it becomes blue, then it becomes purple.
So it is this idea of what is it like to kind of live in this kind of bubble. And when you hear about the stories of things that happen and people who are activists and big cities that are essentially like liberal bastions where there's a relative level of safety. And I don't mean that in like they're never in, you know.
Right. Right, right.
There's never any harm to come to them. That's not what I mean. But I mean, like, there are
more safe spaces, right. Safe pockets, you know, than
it would be like out in Kansas City, you know,
50 miles away. Yeah.
And Kansas City isn't necessarily, like I said, it's not necessarily the most conservative place I've ever lived in. But like, it definitely is. You know, we definitely live in a red state. And there are times when you definitely kind of feel that red stateness. So that was kind of where the idea of the podcast started to begin with 2 years ago. I feel like it's kind of grown into therapy sessions for some of us, kind of vent sessions. There's a lot of ideas that kind of get put in. We all, it's become kind of a collective where it's not necessarily about just being woke and black in America. It's about having compassion, looking at our fellow human beings and seeing that like shit isn't right. Things aren't great and finding solutions to what they should be. You know, or what we can do just to make it, if not at least a little better. I'm going to bring it over to you, Blue. I know I said I was going to let you go last, but as kind of the person who's been the running co-host for, you know, maybe a year and a half, what do you see?
In the beginning, there was a lot of anger, confusion, just sadness. You know, like, really? Is this really where we're at?
Right.
And then there was acceptance, and then there was just plain ignoring it because it just seemed too much. Too stinking much every darn day. Some days hourly.
Like, a lot of days hourly.
I can't, like, do this.
I don't know how we got to here.
The emotions just can't run this high for this long, you know, and not just feel hopeless.
Right.
So, you know, we all had to kind of step back and lick our wounds a little bit and then try and reassess as to, okay, what can we do? What should we be doing? Those kind of conversations to get rid of the whole, I feel helpless in this particular scenario. Because we're not. We're not helpless. We need to be a little better organized, a little more communication. Better communication, definitely. I miss clear communication.
You're saying words that don't know what they mean.
Words mean things.
You're saying words that don't know what they mean. I think that makes a good point because I think that we were... As the podcast itself, there was an idea that I feel like we were kind of going in a certain direction. Mm-hmm. And then November 2016 happened. And it kind of put everyone you know, in a level of disarray. Because we weren't ready for that. That wasn't something that we were, you know, expecting. We had kind of, even if you didn't necessarily like Secretary of State Clinton, you were just like, okay, this is where we're at. And we know this is a thing. And then that's not who we ended up with. And a lot of fear kind of took over.
Yes.
And I think a lot of those episodes around that time period, they show that level of fear of what's, you know, and trying to understand what happened and how we didn't see it coming.
And it was new fear. It wasn't just like, you know, there's fears that maybe you live with on a regular basis and you have to encounter that on a regular basis. But it's new and it's a lot of it and it was unexpected.
Yeah. It was, I mean, I think it was a very tough thing for me. Did you finish your answer?
Yeah, right.
I'm going to bring it over to you, Gabe, as someone, you know, probably the last 6 or 8 months of the show.
Really? Has it been that long?
It's been that long.
Sense of time is out the window. Like, I think the past 10 years of my life happened in, like, the past week. Like, I don't know what's been going on. I've lost my sense of time.
It's something about turning, I don't know, 30
yeah.
after that. That's when I started to notice. I was like, what the hell?
I actually remember your first episode was right after my partner's birthday.
Yep.
So it's been like nine or 10 months. We could have had a baby by now.
That's a scary thought.
That's a terrifying
thought. I love human life. I will never have a child. I'm a dog person.
So, in the almost year since you've been relatively frequent on the show, what are your thoughts? Where do you see that have we grown?
In that glimpse, what does the history look like and what do some of the futures look like? I think it's a little bit difficult to speak to the history just because it's been such a brief period of time. And it sounds like there has been, especially with what you're saying, Linda Blue, there's been so much that has been going on. And it's been so representative of the times and of current events. And it sounds like a very organic, very... like you lived what was going on through some of these podcasts is what that sounded like. And so it sounded very fresh and very reactionary in a very genuine way. So I say that positively. And two responses. One is speaking to this notion that a lot of these discussions might be representative of how we as people are dealing with world events. And I would suggest it's possible for some of us. I will by no means speak for that massive a generalization. It becomes easier to accept that shock. Like, it's still, the things that we see going on are still as awful and they're terrible and they're terrifying, but it, in some cases, for some of us, and probably easy for me to speak from like a white male point of view, you get used to the shock, you get used to the awfulness. And not that it's less awful, but you've responded to it. And so you have some responses to draw from. And so maybe you're not as left with that, like, you don't know what to do with it and you don't necessarily have to stew in it. And so we've had some time to, like, figure out how to respond to this and can I ignore it for periods of time? Like, because I need to have a life. And then the other side of that is, should I not ignore it? So, like, we've had some time to have some exposure to these things, I think is really where I'm going with it. Regardless of what any given individual's response is, long-term or the short-term or whatever, we've had some exposure to it. So it's a little bit difficult, I guess, to speak to that history that I wasn't a part of for this. And I think moving forward, one thing that I've liked to see, just bringing it back to the podcast, bringing it back from like the whole world right back down to here, I'm a huge fan of strategy sessions. I love brainstorming. And if you let me do it, we will strategy session all day long and it'll be organized. And, you know, my fault will be that we'll never actually do anything with it. So we'll strategize and we'll organize and we're going to talk about it and we'll just sit there and do that all day long.
I did say earlier today that I need someone to manage to be the manager of the podcast and just let me come out here and do what I do. So that might be a thing for you this next year.
You may have just created a job for yourself.
I will be very humble.
Excuse me, an unpaid internship.
Yay, experience. I will be very humble with my commitments, but I think where I was going with that is in that relatively short period of time of 6 to 8 months, I think I've seen maybe more of those loose form strategy brainstorming sessions where when it comes to how do you structure a podcast and how do you structure these conversation points, you know, you don't want it too structured, you don't want it scripted, but you want to be able to have a wide range of things that you want to bring into. So kind of playing with how much preparation is too much preparation,
right,
for what kind of topic, things like that. I will love those conversations. And I think I've seen some playing with that a little bit. And I think that's fun.
You brought up a really good point because there were, over the last 2 years, Blue can attest to this, how many times something will have happened in the news and I will be like, I need to record right now. Like, she getting a text message at 10 o'clock. I mean, even today was a text message at like, I realized it's a 2-year anniversary. Oh my gosh.
This needs to happen now.
This is a huge deal. Like, you know, I haven't recorded anything. We had talked about kind of doing something, but then I was like, I actually have to do this like now. Like, this has to happen. Like, there were so many times where that was like, Trump had done something stupid, and I was just like, okay, we have to talk about this right now. Or...
And I want to say that there was a time when, a few specific moments, when I remember you saying something like that, and Linda Blue, your response was like, you know, I can only give so much to this. Like, I can't. Yeah. And that's where I think hearing that put into words, my response is like, that's so fair. You know, like, that makes so much sense that you have to ration your attention, you have to ration your energy. And I'll be the first person to say that's easy for me to say, coming from who I am, to be able to make that choice, because not everybody gets to make that choice. You right. have to respond to, you know, some things when they're in your face and threatening you. That being said, being able to say, how much attention do I want to give to something, and still be fair to it.
Right.
Not to say to ignore it, but to give strategic attention, maybe to be strategic with how you're mindful about things, to be strategic with how you respond to things, and not dwell on it. And right. I think it's very easy to dwell on things when we see such an increase of injustices. And they're so in our faces.
Yeah.
And then we're just like, well, what do we do?
I'm going to stick a pin in that increase of injustices thing for a minute. Finally, to you, Stewie. As a person who, this is, again, you are the OG. We did a podcast previous to the inception of KC Caffeine. And it's kind of, this podcast bore out of that one. I don't even remember what the conversation, how it started. But essentially, you need to do this conversation that we had. So you've essentially, for the last 2 years, been kind of a listener. You've gotten to take in the listen role. And that's an interesting perspective. How do you feel about the podcast as of, you know, 2 years?
It's interesting to me. I am fortunate enough that I got to be the ground floor.
Right.
And we started with hope. And then I became a listener. And I listened to Blue and Jason for a year and a half. And you joined it about 9-10 months ago, and it's interesting, especially when you talk about current events, political topics, especially anything that happened after November 2016. Hope got knocked around, and hope got beat up a lot. But here we are 2 years later, doing this podcast, celebrating the fact that it's been 2 years that this has been going on.
Right.
So hope is still here, and I'm fortunate enough that, I mean, I got invited back for the 2 year, so... Clearly, I didn't do anything wrong in that time frame.
I brought you here to discuss something with
you. You're the weakest link. Goodbye. But it warms my heart to see that hope is still here. You know, we talk about being in the blue dot in this state. And it's an interesting conundrum to be that blue dot in this state.
Yeah.
And really... More so, it's got to be more so difficult for the three of you than it ever has been for me. I get to easily walk through the entirety of my day and shrug off nearly every event that happens if I choose to. I mean, it makes no impact. So I have to actively make the choice to impact every one of those events in any way that I can, which can be challenging because you start to lose friends and family. You have to say, hey, can't. Really talk to you, you say stuff that I don't agree with. And when you try to have that conversation with them and say, hey, I don't agree with where you're going with this, and this is why, sometimes you just don't get to talk to anybody anymore. So Christmas is going to suck.
Or is it going to be amazing? I'm only going to have to do things for myself.
And well, there's that.
It worked.
All the money I get to keep in my pocket because I don't have to buy you gifts anymore.
Because I'm not buying you racist motherfuckers nothing.
But when I think about the consequences of those actions and weigh them against the things that I hear spoken on this podcast over the last 2 years, there's no question which one is the easy decision. The easy decision is to stand with hope. So let's hope that another year goes by and that we do what we do here and we do it well and that our message reaches people. Things get better.
And that really kind of brings me to the last thing I want to talk about when it comes to the 2-year anniversary before we get into like the meat and potatoes of what I want to talk about today. And that is going forward. Right now, the way that the podcast is, we're not where I want it to be. But we're in a good place. Hey, I don't do this for any other reason, but I feel like we, being in the blue dot in the red state, I want to create a platform for people who don't feel like their voices are heard to be heard. That was the whole purpose of doing this. You know, the reason that I choose the people that I choose on this show is because I enjoy listening to their perspectives, even if their perspectives are not the same as me. Most of the time, everyone's perspective is the same. But then we also have, like, you know, Todd, who will play devil's advocate and cause, you know, me
to have heartburn. Love you, Todd.
I mean, you're okay, Todd.
What I want now is just, like all I want from this is growth. And whatever that growth means, it, you know, is what it is. If there, we get to a point where we have all of these listeners and can do, like, live shows and put things on in Kansas City for people to come to, and great. That would be awesome, you know. But then the question then becomes, how do I take that and give it back into the community? So that's my goal for the next year. I mean, the easy question thing is, by this time next year, I want the third anniversary to be a live show where we have, you know, a venue and people, and we're not just doing it in my house, you know, where we're doing it somewhere and we're talking to an audience and getting responses.
So this would probably be a bad time to tell you that I don't do public speaking.
No, I got it.
You get one of those. Record your own part, and the rest of us will do it live, and we'll just play clips of you.
We'll have, like, Linda Blue. We'll just do, like,
Linda Blue is here in spirit.
Linda Blue's standing here, but she's not speaking. And her, she's facing the opposite direction.
No, we'll get one of those screens. We'll just put you behind the screen. That way nobody can see.
Nobody can see.
And we'll change your voice. Yeah, so it'll be like,
great. Oh, it'd be amazing. It'd be like an episode of Unsolved Mysteries. I'm ready.
Oh, like, why is it gotta be Unsolved Mysteries? Wait!
Because who is Blue?
Who's the mystery person behind the mask?
Who's behind the mask? Blue's not real!
That's going heavy.
I've been throwing my voice for the last 2 years, guys. Blue's not real. No.
Jason, one thing I've heard you speak about previously was bringing in more of a variety of people.
Yes.
And, you know, not going so far as to be like, should gays be allowed to marry? Like, you know, not to play devil's advocate for the sake of playing devil's advocate, but finding a variety of opinions and voices that bring kind of a diversity of perspective and not just for argument's sake kind of thing, you know, but something when you're talking about representation to find those perspectives and either bring folks in or be able to capture and relay whatever that anecdote, whatever that experience was. So like, hey, I had a conversation back here. So that's something that I know you've been talking about, is to bring some elements of that in.
I do. And it's the only issue that, it's not even really an issue I have with it. It's just a thing. I mean, where we are in the public discourse now is it is very difficult. We all have our bubbles and we kind of keep the like-minded people in our bubble. And it's really difficult to find people who have different opinions than I do on, you know, the things that I think are important, like, you know, social justice and is white privilege a thing? Like, these are things, you know, most of my friends are like.
Right. And then I think that's one of those, like, bringing up a difference of opinion on is white privilege a thing? Like, yes, I know there's people who don't believe in it. I will be the first in line to suggest the times when it's valuable to have that conversation are going to be few and far between. If it's framed as, does this exist?
Right.
By, you know, how it's defined, how it's brought up, it's a yes or no. People have already made up their minds. There's no discussion really to be had.
Right.
So I think part of that might be figuring out how we can frame our questions and figuring out how, when you find somebody that you agree with, how do you differ in your approach? How do you differ in where you want to go with this? So I think there's always going to be space that we can flesh that out. And I think being able to capture that and hone in on that with the right questions, we can find that variety of perspective, and it's probably all around us, absolutely right here in this room, if we're asking those right questions and framing it in the right way. And if it's one of those, like, do you think we should do good things? Like, yes, of course, no one's going to say we should do bad things. But once you start asking those questions, well, generally
speaking. I mean, depending on what the bad things are.
Right.
To whom? But, you know, if you phrase something that
Apollo's ambrosia.
That wasn't even relevant to good or bad.
Oh my goodness.
But it worked.
A positive work.
It worked.
But I think playing with the specific questions and how they're framed, we can hone in on those differences, even in a room full of people that otherwise agree with each other.
And that's why you are the executive producer of Casey Caffeine.
Oh, God.
That's what you...
You just Ursula'd me. You just... Zoof, popped that contract right out.
I did. Sing!
You know,
I didn't see the Little Mermaid part coming.
It's always coming.
Yeah.
Baby.
Just found that out. It's all good.
She could have written her messages down. She clearly wrote her name. She could have wrote her name for Prince Eric. He's like, what's your name? Let me write it down for you. She's maybe clearly literate enough.
Maybe she thought he couldn't read. I don't know. You know, we're not going to get into a...
If there's anyone that could read, he could afford to be able to read in that kingdom.
Yeah, well.
I mean... We're not going to get into it. Maybe one episode we can do a deep dive. We can't exactly use money as a basis brain.
For intelligence.
Too motherfucking shay. You hear me? Too shay. Speaking of, this is just a side note. I just want you all to know, as a general rule, and this just happened today, that y'all can't tell me nothing.
Oh, yes. Missy Elliott's following you on Twitter. I don't know how she's
following me on Twitter. I don't know what I did to deserve this.
Love you.
But you can't tell me nothing else. I'm not going to be shit for at least a week. I just want y'all to know that.
I was like, how the heck did he manage that?
I don't know, but I saw that blog and it said, and I was like, let me make sure this is not like some old dummy account. I was like, it is the real verified.
You're going to get someone coming up and saying, sir, you're double parked. I don't think you understand. These are
Missy
my followers.
Is following me.
What are your credentials? Do you see this?
Right here. Wear it around your neck. It's in the lanyard.
We need to print that out and frame it.
I told my boss, I said, she was like, are you, I was like, I'm going to phone up something on my phone. And she was like, are you on your phone? I said, you can't tell me nothing right now. Look at this. She was like, who is that? I said, see? So I'm going to talk to old white people. Get away.
Who is that? Was her response?
Hang on.
How old is she?
It was at the very top of the screen. Did she not see it?
I don't know, but that's
at first, I looked at the wrong part of the screen. So everybody, why is he posting this?
I knew. Like, I was like, well,
did it? Like, it I said, when I saw that thing says Missy Elliott followed you back, I said,
"What
the
devil?" Crop that a little better.
I said,
"You can make a shirt out of that." It's just gonna be like that.
100% I'm making a shirt out of that. I've already got the screenshots. It's happening.
The world has the screenshots.
I just want y'all to know that for a week, I'm not gonna be shit. I'm gonna be acting completely extra on Twitter and Facebook. I might even start using my Instagram again. Like, I'm gonna be not shit for a while, so just be ready.
Braced.
I'm tweeting everybody at Matthew Mercer. Missy Elliott follows me on Twitter. Why don't you
step up your game?
Step your game up. I'm winning up here. That's all I'm saying. We're doing this.
Okay.
At any rate, that's just all I want. I just had to get that out before we got into really what I wanted to talk about.
That was your second year anniversary gift.
That was. Oh.
That was.
Couldn't tell me nothing. And my birthday's on Saturday too.
What?
Shoot. Tomorrow is Missy Elliott Appreciation Day. I just want y'all to know.
I'm gonna listen to Missy Elliott all day tomorrow.
All day tomorrow. Just now. Tag me and I'll anything you see.
Gonna make a Pandora station for Missy Elliott tomorrow morning. As soon as I get up.
That's what we're doing.
We're gonna see their metrics skyrocket.
What happened? What happened is she started following me and I just had to get the word out. Couldn't hold it in.
Oh, you did do an appreciation. We've done a podcast where we did an appreciation already of her. Because
we've talked about her.
The Super Bowl, right?
Yes.
When we had to question some children's lives. Like, how do you not know who Missy is?
Come on now.
We digress.
And let's get into the real topic of what was on there. Because I just had to.
You're about to hard 180 on this.
This is a hard
one. You're way up here. You're about to take it way down here.
So, as you guys know, on the last episode, we talked about some things that were happening in my life, some emotional things that have happened, and I've been fairly transparent about what's going on. To some people, I've probably been a little bit too transparent. But at the same time, I feel like that's how I cope, and if I can help one person, then great. But I really wanted to talk about and kind of do like a series of episodes where we talk about mental health and how it affects family members and friends and ways to cope. Because I think that, you know, one of the things that I said was, and talking to some other friends of mine, is like, prior to like me having panic attacks and anxiety and this stuff all coming on, I was always the type that was like, if you don't calm your ass down, I didn't get it. I didn't get it as a thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, kind of a like, what's this cry for attention? And it wasn't until like it started happening to me, you know, that I understand that when someone's like, oh, just calm down or just think about something else or just that, you can't. And like, it's not as easy as people who don't have that issue make it out to be. And it does affect the people around. I've leaned very, very heavily on my partner in blue. You've gotten Jason drama. And
it's not drama.
It's is. Helping a friend. It is, but
no, yeah. It's not. And that's the problem right there. You are encapsulating the problem right there, is that you are suffering. You're suffering right now because you know that something's not right with you. And you are putting down your suffering because you feel as if needing help is a problem when it shouldn't be. This is when you're supposed to reach out to your friends, your family, and lean on them, because that's what they're supposed to be there for. If you don't do that, then you leave yourself isolated in a situation where you do not need to be isolated.
Right.
And that is the response that most people have. And then we're asking the question, why didn't they talk to me after they're gone? Why didn't they pick up the phone? Why didn't they tell me they needed help? And it's too late then.
Right.
So this is what should be happening. So yes, you should be sharing, because people need to know it's okay to share.
Well, and I think that's why I've been so open and transparent about it, is because my instinct is to hide.
Yeah.
My instinct is to go in a corner and not say anything and I don't know. The thing is, I don't know, talking to my friend, a friend of mine in Florida, who has gone through similar stuff. You know, she was like, I guarantee that you've been probably dealing with this for a long time and just didn't know
what it was, and
just was like, I just don't feel good today. And it wasn't until someone gave a name to it that it was like, okay, cool. You know, now you're able to kind of recognize and understand what the signs are. And I'm like, I know there were days where where people would be like, you want to go do this? And I would be like, I really don't, you know, and
the difference is occasional days.
Right.
That's everybody.
Yeah.
Right. It's the prolonged days, the weeks, the months for some of us that's when you know there's a problem, because right. It just doesn't go. It's not like a light switch that you can flip on and flip off whenever you choose to. It would be so much more helpful if it was that like that. Right. I can understand that. I can work with that.
Right.
But this generalized anxiety, this feeling of loss of control, this feeling of you're just always irritable, just nothing makes you happy.
Right.
Or you're just so stinking sad that somebody cutting you off in traffic might make you shed a tear when normally you'd be cussing them the heck out. You know? You're like, what is wrong with me? What? And you know what it feels. I mean, you can feel it, but you don't know what to do about it.
Right.
And I think that is what baffles a lot of folks, is it occurs on this like level of irrationality, which isn't to say it's not real or invalid, but I say irrationality because you can't just rationalize your way out of it. You can't just make sense out of it. I think like, oh, somebody cut me off in traffic. Well, you know, sometimes that happens, or maybe they weren't paying attention, or you know, statistically speaking, this is that, you know, whatever the case is, you can rationally make sense of that and go about your day.
Right.
Possibly. Well, some people can in some circumstances, but then the other side of that, for folks who maybe aren't exposed to seeing somebody like this or don't know to give it a name of mental health or anything like that, the first instinct is be rational about it, make it go away, refocus. And it makes it sound so simple. And I think one of the things, because you're talking a lot about how much you share, and I know that's not the first time you brought up that this is part of how you're processing it for both your, you know, your personal processing, as well as there's possibly some value out here for other folks if you share that. And I think there's an act of witnessing and being witnessed that is so helpful to that. When somebody is suffering in silence, regardless of what it is, if it's mental health, like what we're talking about, or if it's abuse or whatever the case may be, if you just are feeling ashamed, you know, just because of something happened, if somebody's suffering alone and they have nobody to talk to and they can't put it into words, or they don't know how to give it a name, I would suggest that there's a process that goes on, that you know something is wrong, but you can't put your finger on it. And so somewhere along the way, because you can't kind of actualize that, there's an assumption where it must just be me. And that it must just be me. And sometimes it's not an assumption. Sometimes it's people around you saying, no, this is just you, you know? So sometimes it's really explicit. Sometimes it's just this quiet assumption. And that, I think, makes it 10 times worse, because now you're blaming yourself for something that's already wrong. And it just completely invalidates you. It's not really a
thing to blame.
Right. Right. It's
there's no place to really lay blame, and that's another problem with it, is because you can't point to one specific thing and go, this is what's causing me this problem. Mm-hmm. If I get rid of this, or if I change this, this will make this better.
And I think that exactly what you're saying, yeah, trying to rationalize something when that's not the solution,
correct,
that will be the end result. The only way that I think sometimes maybe somebody forms a sense of control over these things is you blame yourself. And yeah, that can make it 10 times worse, and that could be absolutely wrong. But hey, at least you just gave it a reason, you gave it a name, and that might be preferable to not giving it a name, just because that can be so scary unto itself.
Well, and I think the thing that was, for me, the thing that's been the hardest to deal with is not knowing. Kind of, like, the way that my brain works and the way that I try to rationalize things is, and this starts from kind of the beginning of how this all started. I was like, oh, my chest hurts. Obviously, there is, you know, issues with my heart. Let's go do this. Let's run these tests. These tests come back negative. You're fine. But that doesn't stop the fact that this is what I'm feeling.
It's still going on, right?
And so then it was, okay, well, you're talking to the friend of mine in Florida. She was like, well, I think, you know, you're having panic attacks. And I was like, that makes sense. So that was kind of the assumption that we went on. This is what we're going to treat. But in the back of my mind, I'm still like, okay, but there could be something else. You know, now my doctors and everybody are kind of going in this direction. And I'm like, hey, there still could be something happening over here. Then, you know, they put you on all this medication, and the medication has side effects. And some of those side effects are gnarly.
Some of those side effects are worse than the original problems you were having.
Yeah, there was, I had them pull me off of one of the medications because I was like, I can't. I was sweating and cold and having like bone aches. Everyone's like, just get up and, you know, go and like, go do. And I'm like, I don't want to do anything because everything hurts. And it's really hard to explain when to people when something, you can't describe what it is that you're feeling. And I know that it was very frustrating for my partner. He would say, well, what's wrong? What are you feeling? And I'm like, I don't know. I just know that I don't feel right. You know, I can't explain. And he's like, well, I can't help you if you don't explain it. And
that's, it's explaining, like, it, unfortunately, to, yeah, that's what it feels like.
Yeah, and it's
you
like,
you don't feel right, you feel off,
and
you
if,
know.
If the first layer of that problem is, I don't, yeah, know, I don't have a name for this, then that's inching your way towards giving it a name.
Even
as you,
harder.
The other part of that problem is that, especially with mental health, it's not something that is often physically diagnosed.
Right. Yeah,
so it's a process of elimination. If it is an internal issue and there aren't outward signs for us to see, and there are a few, but not nearly as many as maybe we pick up on.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
like, you don't have a swelling process or, yeah, a bruising process.
There's no
that
swelling,
clearly attracts,
no bruising,
your vision.
Like, right, your bone isn't at an odd angle.
Yeah.
Like, if your bone's at an odd angle, oh, my arm's broke.
Yeah.
Right.
For someone, right, who's going through a mental health issue, there are no physical indicators, so you have to look for the other indicators, mm-hmm, and you have to listen for the verbal indicators.
Right.
This is going to sound really weird, but I watch everything that you post on Facebook and all of your tweets very closely. You and two other people, like, anytime I start seeing stuff that is too negative, I'm immediately on the phone texting you guys, hey, you okay? What's going on? Do you want to talk? Because it's not something I can see.
Right.
Well, I have to make sure I'm checking in.
And I appreciate that. And that's kind of one of the things that's one of the reasons why I wanted to bring the three of you in and just have this conversation. Because in the case of me, I can't speak to anyone else that you guys have dealt with that's had this, you know, situations like this. But in the case of me, I've personally reached out to each of you, you know, and been like, this is what I'm feeling. This is what's going on. I'm not okay for this. Or I, you know, even if it's, hey, I need you to just talk to me for a little bit so that I can, because I feel the panic coming and I just need to have somebody take my brain off of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just enough so that I can get home or get to wherever it was I was going to go. And the scariest thing is being by myself. Because when I'm by myself, that is when the thoughts have their way of creeping in. And, oh, I'm starting to get emotional now just thinking about it, you know. And so, like, I will do things like, hey, Blue, you know, can you just come and hang out? You know, I'm going to bed. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to bed. Mm-hmm. But, like, I just need to have somebody.
And by 10:30, I'm going to bed too, right on that couch.
Right. Just that idea of having, mm-hmm, you know, having that other person. So that way, because I can sit here and rationally, logically, I know I'm fine.
I would also suggest that what you're describing makes sense, you know, but the fact that it makes sense isn't necessarily, like, going to, quote-unquote, solve anything that's going on. It, like, from a philosophical standpoint, when you think about, like, how do you have a sense of self? How do you know yourself? It always requires another person. You can never just know yourself without having somebody else there to reflect back on you and kind of have a frame of reference. And from, like, going deep philosophy, like, that's a model that is required. You can't just know yourself independently, autonomously. It right. requires this back and forth and this communication and this reflection and all of these things. So when you're talking about if you're feeling isolated at some point, or you're feeling you're concerned that you've only got one kind of voice that you're hearing, if it's just your own point of view, right. having somebody else here to have a point of view, on some level I would suggest that makes sense. That if you've got something in question, you want to have somebody else to be able to witness that, say something, reflect that back.
Yeah, I think there's that. And then there's also that idea, because, like, we have, you know, the other roommate here, and just he can be in his room, and just knowing that there's another person in the house makes the anxiety go down 50%. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, okay, there's somebody here. So that way, if I need to just holler out and say, hey, can you come here for a second? Knowing that there's a person there makes a world of difference. It's scary for the people that care about me to kind of see what's happening, because everyone's so used to me being this one way, fun and happy and full of all of this energy and awesomeness. And for the last couple of months, they've not seen that. It's been very, like, when we went to go paint minis that mm-hmm. time, I felt the moment that I had to leave. And, like, it was like, okay, we're good. And I was like, we gotta go, and we gotta go now. And luckily, I had that you were just like, okay, cool. But it's scary for me not feeling like I'm myself. Mm-hmm. So my question for you guys is, like, okay, is there as much of a difference? And I'm just asking, is there as much of a difference as I feel like there is in kind of the way that I was prior to May when all of this stuff happened?
Yes, there's a difference.
I agree, there's a difference.
People still know you're you.
Right.
You know, it's not like, who are you? People still know you're you, but kind of there are some differences. And when you take initiative, when you're questioning, one of the things that I love about you is mm-hmm. that you're opinionated. And I love that. And it's not like end all be all, this is what it is, goodbye. But there's lots of perspective there. And what I think has been happening, one thing I've been witnessing in the past few months is a lot of that perspective has gone from outward to inward. And there's just kind of this digging through process, and there's some digestion going on, some reflections, and definitely some dwelling. And I say dwelling in the way of, like, sometimes dwelling is not the most productive thing.
Yeah.
But I see that. And that's one thing I think I see is there was a lot of outward perspective that has been turned inward. I'll also be the first to suggest that in and of itself, I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. Like, reflection is beautiful. Reflection is great. But I think one thing that I'm witnessing is there's a lot of that questioning, that it's not like a building up questioning.
Yeah. I feel like there is a lot of...
So sorting through questions.
I feel like there's a lot of sorting through and figuring out kind of where I am now. But one of the things that I feel like happened when all of this kind of went down is it took that sense of who I knew myself to be and shook it up. Like, it shook that Etch-A-Sketch up. You know, because...
And that would be the difference that we're seeing. Is that sense of yourself that you were so well known for.
Yeah, it's kind of...
You can see that it's not... there,
like, those pieces are there, but maybe they're kind of over here and somewhere over here, like when you say you're kind of, yeah.
It's like somebody took the puzzle and then took a couple pieces out.
Right. And it's just like, I would like my pieces back, please.
Right.
I mean, like, I would like all of my pieces. And
and they're there. They're just not where they're supposed to be.
Right. And I told my therapist, I said, I want to be better than I was. Like, that's the, and I have now become an advocate for therapy. Holy shnikes.
Yes. Everybody should have access to it.
Everyone should have, like...
An affordable therapist, yes.
Like,
the stigma against it is so...
Doesn't make any sense to me.
And I get it, but it's just such an ugly stigma.
I don't understand why there's a stigma, though, because everybody needs to talk to somebody. If you don't have that best friend that you call every night or every other night or once a week or once a month, if you don't have that connection that you can go to during those times, then... There's your therapist.
Right, but
you and I might know that, but right. like the majority of the world that's conditioned with...
I know, that you're just supposed to tough it out consumerism, and just suck it up and...
Right.
There's, you know, only so much sucking up you can do sometimes.
Right. And that's the thing.
Bottle space.
Like, it's...
Right, yeah, there's...
You can't bottle it all up.
I have a group of friends that I can call at any time and say, this is what's happening and, you know, this is how I'm feeling. And I still need a therapist because I need someone. And this is the thing that I'm learning. I need someone who doesn't have, I say they don't have any skin in the game. They don't have a vested interest in making me feel better other than I want you to feel better.
Right.
Right now, my friends, you know, they're I want you to feel better because you, it makes me feel good when you feel good.
Right.
This is this person that's just like, I want you to feel better, and we're going to figure out and dig deep into the ways that, how to make you feel better. And you're going to say things that I don't like. And
if you drive into a ditch and you need to get to a path forward, it's easy, I think, to just say, keep driving forward and, hey, you're going to make it. And, hey, let's be optimistic and that's great. But sometimes you have to back up and reverse and kind of go over those, whatever those scars are, whatever those, you know, you have to go back and retrace something that you've been at before that maybe was awful.
Right.
It sucks, but that's, you know, one of those
different conversations. And there may be things that I don't feel necessarily comfortable talking to my friends about.
Right.
You know, they involve my partner, or they involve,
sure,
you know, there are things that I just may not feel comfortable in that, you know, to have those conversations. And having the conversation with the therapist, because I know that they have a responsibility to keep their mouth shut, you know what I'm saying, and let me get out what I have to get out and just let that be what it is. I think that makes, it makes a difference. You know, the people who are, you know, who are my friends who are going through this, what my hope is that you eventually will start to see things get better. And you will eventually start to see me kind of go back to who the old Jason was and kind of beyond that. Because I can't stay where I'm at. Like, that's the thing. Like, this is where I am now is unsustainable. And I'm better now than I was this time last year or last month. Mm-hmm. And I'm way better now than I was two months ago.
And I will commend you on your progress for even noticing that.
Yeah,
because that's a big deal.
I can get out of bed. Like, I can get out of bed. So that's always,
right?
Like, and that's the thing. Like, I've never been the type of person who, you know, I always want to go somewhere. I always want to do something. So for me to be like, I don't want to do anything. I just want to go lay in bed and watch cartoons. I don't want to play video games. I don't want to. All I want to do, like painting minis, was the one thing that I was like, I could do this if, because it didn't. It involved minimal effort, but it was high output.
It brings your attention right up in here.
Yeah. And video games, although they are minimal effort, high output, I didn't even want to do that. Mm. I didn't want to watch the D&D shows that I watch. I didn't want to do anything.
It was interesting for me when you stopped coming to D&D, when you started phoning it in. It almost felt like, or could have been interpreted like, you were putting a barrier in place, and that barrier was distance from the rest of the group. And it was, for me, that was concerning. I was like, okay, did we make Jason mad? And then some things started happening, and you were like, hey, this is what's going on with me. And I was like, oh, okay, that makes a little more sense. It is interesting on our game nights. You move a lot. And sometimes I wonder if it's based on what we're doing or if it's your anxiety.
It's both.
Because events will be happening in the game, and you may be in the bedroom 1 minute, and then you're at your computer, and then you're outside, and then you're in the bedroom, and then you're at your computer, and then you're in the bedroom, and you go all over the place. And I've been watching that from a distance, physically, because you created that distance, but still let me see it. So, for me, that's, I mean, when you would talk about, you know, how you've changed, that's one of the big things that I saw.
Well, I think that the reason for the not going up to D&D is a twofold reason. One,
it is a drive. I'll give you that.
It's a drive.
I will give you that one.
A, it's a drive, and B, because I have to be at work so early in the morning, I want to be able to play. And the drive to get there, and then
the drive home.
The drive home. It's just like I've got to leave.
Yeah, you gotta literally block out what, half a day.
Yeah, like
yeah. I mean, maybe not quite that much.
Not quite that much, but like it's a bit of a, like it's a bit. So like that, in my mind, it became, at first it was easier to do. That was the easier way to do this.
And in the very beginning, you were only at your computer.
Right.
And then it switched to the phone. And then it's the phone or the computer. Or sometimes both.
Right.
And then you and just roam.
As time, like, and it became what that game became was an anchor. You know, if I'm being 100% honest, it anchored me to where my life was previous. Because I had this one thing, and I could, you know, I could slug off the games I DM because I'm the DM in it. So if I don't feel like doing it,
what are you gonna say?
You need to be mad? It's cool. Be mad. Lightning you know bolts. What I'm saying? It is what it is. I'll just get a beholder and kill you. I don't care. You know what I'm saying? Now what game do you have? Give it. But you know, I could not play video games because, you know, my partner would rather watch TV anyway. not watching Critical Role was fine, because...
What impact did that
have? What impact did it actually have? But there was a real intangible impact to missing the game that I'm a player in. And I didn't want to... As much as I didn't want to go anywhere and I didn't want to do anything, I also didn't want to let anyone else down. I'm not doing much in the game to begin with, but at least I show up. Mm-hmm. You know, at least I'm there. So it was a kind of an anchor that kept me from going any deeper than I was already going, because I had to at least fake it on Tuesdays.
So much of what you're saying is reminding me. So six years ago, like so much of what you've been saying for the past while is reminding me that when I got out of my bad relationship, and I'm just going to call it a bad relationship in the spirit of understatements, and gone from there. When I got out of it for the last time, I knew that my kind of recovery, my personal recovery process would take years, and I know it would come in phases, and there'd be ways I could predict and ways that I wouldn't be able to predict. It's just, for lack of a better analogy, the way that I thought about how I knew I was going to survive getting out of that was kind of like Horcruxes. Like, you had to take pieces of yourself and hide them away to know that you're going to discover these later, because I can't let myself be this right now, or for whatever reason I'm losing control of this. And so right. The best case scenario is, how can I kind of like pick this up later? And so what I'm hearing from you describe is there's all these things that you enjoy, and maybe they're falling off, or maybe it's just kind of fading out or going to the back burner, or whatever the case may be, but there's still an interest to hold on to them in some capacity or another.
Right.
And I know what some of my experiences have been that, like, I just rediscovered being creative. I used to be so creative and just write all the time, and it was creative expression, and it was great, and it came easy, but it was also work, and it was just this great experience doing something creative, regardless of what the output is, or if anybody sees it or witnesses the work that you create. And it's been like 6 years since I've done a single thing creative, and it was just like the past week that started coming back. And it was like this feeling that I could see it a mile away, and I'm like, oh, I see this coming. In the next month, I'm going to start to feel it. And then weeks would go by, and I'm like, ooh, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling creative. And then so it just kind of came slowly. And then it came with time management, and I have to set aside time for it. And so, you know, these pieces from my experience came back, but they look different, and they feel right. different. And it wasn't fast, and it wasn't a sudden thing, but they still came back. And I felt like for a long time, having left that relationship, I felt like I was a very different person before that relationship than I was after that relationship. And when I got out, and I really loved the person that I was when I got into that relationship. I don't think in an unhealthy way. I think I just felt like I had a strong sense of self. I had a strong sense of doubt. And, you know, not like I knew everything in the world, but was fair with where I was. And I liked that. And I left that relationship not knowing who I was, feeling like this isn't me, feeling like I'm not somebody else. The way that I defined myself was I'm just the after effect of someone else. I don't right. know if that makes any sense.
It does make sense.
It's not like I had a different identity. It's not like I don't know what my name is. You know, it was just you define yourself by who you used to be. And that can be a really awful feeling, and it can be a really shameful feeling in a lot of ways, even though nobody else would know the difference unless I came out and said it.
Right.
But it, for me, took years. I mean, I got out of the relationship, I immediately felt better. You know, like, there's still a short-term gain.
Like, I was good, but
trying to...
It's amazing how that works.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how simple it seems in retrospect. But it made sense at the time to struggle with it.
Can you grab some water? Well, and I think it's into, like even doing the podcast, I've wanted to kind of do this series ever since me and Bridget had that conversation. And we recorded it. I had a plan, and this is what I wanted to do. And then just the idea of doing anything was like, it. Not only did it feel like work, it felt like the last thing on God's green earth I wanted to have anything to do with. Mm. I just want to do anything. And look, now I'm starting to feel like, you know how you said the pieces are in difference? I'm starting to feel like those pieces are starting to get back to where they're supposed to be at. And maybe part of it is the medication. You know, maybe there are, don't get me wrong, there are days that are great, and then there are days that are not good. And I've got people like, how are you doing? And I'm like, I'm trying. Yep. And I don't mean that like, I'm not doing okay, but I'm trying. I mean it to mean like, I'm just trying day by day to be
right.
fine.
We're focusing on the daily someday, successes.
Right. And some days fine is right here. And some days I'm miles away from fine. Mm-hmm. I say all of that to say, so as final thoughts, what are some things or some experiences that you guys have had as friends of someone who, how do you cope with it? Because you have to, just like everybody else, you know, just like the person who's dealing with whatever these, you know, mental instabilities are, you guys as the friends have to deal with them as well.
You meet them where they're at, for the most part. I mean, it's essentially, do you need me? Great. Let's go walk, hang out, sit and chat. Usually sitting and chatting.
or, you know, they may need quiet time. You got to respect that.
So then at what point, because this is the thing that I think that I have an issue with when I'm dealing with people that have this prior. I was always, and like I said, I now have a different, completely different understanding of it. It was always, well, you're sad. I make people happy, so I'm just going to come and bother you until you're happy. And
it's not about that.
It's not about, like, I'm realizing it's not about that.
Not about that at all. And if, as you mentioned, your perception of that changed because you didn't quite understand what they were feeling at the time.
Right.
You just assumed that this was a normal, blasé day. Hey, let's hang out. Oh, great. I can bring out my friends. Oh, fantastic. Wonderful. I'm feeling much better.
Like, right. A surface level emotion that maybe there's not much tied to it.
And I will say this. Even when I'm in those moments, if, like, you know, Sarah Lynn comes by or you guys come over, I will be happy to see you guys in that moment.
It doesn't feel
the same.
But it doesn't. That joy. And I said to my therapist that I don't know if I've ever been happy by that sense of, like,
long-term fulfillment
and everything is wonderful and, like, white picket fence. I've always been like, I'm cool. I think it's cool.
Philip K. Dick wrote the book, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Yes.
Which I love.
And they had, spoiler alert, it's been out forever, so I'm just going to say it. they had some machine in it. I forgot what it's called, but it's just supposed to be this futuristic machine that you dial in a number and it gives you a feeling. And so it's our equivalent, for analogy's sake, would be like drugs or TV or whatever we do to self-medicate. But they just had a machine and it was a box and you type in your number and I want to feel a very specific, an extremely specific feeling. Not just like happiness or joy, but the specific type of happiness you feel when you see a soap opera that has a happy ending. You know, like they honed in for whatever you wanted that
to be. Can I have that machine?
Well, you do have the machine.
It's probably going to be... shocking.
We do have the machines, and I think the point was to illustrate that they're all around us. We already do these things, and what part of that illustrated was that there is this husband and wife that had the machine, and the husband was out trying to solve his problems, and it's this really bleak world, and everything sucks, and nobody ever had a high point of emotion, but he was out there trying.
And the wife is just...
And the wife was just plugging shit in, and their relationship deteriorated, and it was extremely hollow. And so part of that analogy, one of the interpretations of it, is, like, surface-level feelings are great, and they're necessary, and sometimes they're necessary for survival. But if it's only those surface-level emotions, if there's no attention or mindfulness paid to what's causing it, and I wouldn't get into, like, genuineness or authenticity, but if there's underlying things going on, there is that long-term experiences that they're different from surface. They're just different.
Right. And I think that it's... That's a really good point. Both of those points are really good. But the meeting people where they are, for me, even on both sides, there's always this need for me to kind of put the show on.
And before it came easy for you and you didn't think about it. And it was just something that you did.
Well, it was just something that I did. But like, and I could be upset or sad and still put the show on. Like,
but now it's harder to fake.
But now it's way harder to do. It's harder to fake that emotion. It's harder to be like, let me just sit here and, you know, perform for y'all when I don't want to. I can't even be coaxed to do it now. Yeah. Like, before I could be like, you could coax me to do it, to be like, okay, here, yeah, I know I'm funny, blah, blah. But I find that, like, the humor is my way of dealing with other stuff. You know, a lot of my humor is self-deprecating. Why is my humor self-deprecating? Because if I make the joke,
nobody else gets to make the joke.
So,
which plays into that, your words make reality kind of thing. Right. Which is what all of advertising and billions of dollars is based off of. Which, so there's got
to
be something.
My therapist told me that I need to stop doing that. Because, you know.
It sinks in.
You know, after a while, you know, your brain doesn't recognize jokes. And I'm like, I'm just playing. She's like, your brain didn't recognize that. Your brain's just hearing you say that you're terrible and that you're trash. So what are you going to be? And I'm like, you know what? You're right. I don't like it, but you're right. So to open up to the two of you as well, same question.
For me, it's interesting. And I mentioned that there are some other people I know who at times exhibit anxiety or depression. And like I said, I watch Twitter and I watch your Facebook and whatever you text me. And I will read far more about the text itself than what you're actually telling me. And I will say to you, hey, do you want to talk? What's going on? Are you okay? I will absolutely be the person that up front says to you, are you okay? And you can tell me no. Because I will then be the person that says, cool, how can I be of help to you? Not how can I help you? Right. How can I be of help to you? And there's a difference in those two things in that if I just say, how can I help you? Then it sounds like, how can I fix you?
Right.
I know I can't do that. That's not my job. That's an SEP. That's somebody else's problem. I can't do that. I can, however, if you say, I am not okay today and I would like some company. That I can do. I can be of help right. by coming over and hanging out. We can build a fort with blankets and pillows and the cushions off the couch. I'm down. We'll play video games from there. If you don't want to play video games, we'll play board games. If you don't want to play board games, we'll play cards. If you don't want to play cards, we'll figure it out. But I will be there.
Right.
So there are people that I just watch in... Really, when I say it out loud, it sounds super creepy.
No, it's
I'm in your bushes.
Well, and I think that's really important. I think that's the thing that's the, and I honestly would hazard a guess and say that that's the most important is, yes, you can have all of the right words to say. We can have this, all of these conversations about, you know, where my brain is and what I'm doing and what are my steps to make things better. But at the end of the day, I just want someone to be there. Even if it's like I'm laying on the couch, I'm just laying in the bed and someone is like with my face to the wall and they're just there. And we're not saying a word. Sometimes that's just all I need is just somebody to be in the room.
And that's my job. That's the thing I'm going to bring to the table in every friendship. The moment you say, I need you, I show up. I may be hungover or or bruised or battered or tired, but when you call me, I'm going to show up.
Drinking on call.
Fuck yeah, I do. Sorry, I just dropped the F-bomb on the...
It's oh, fine. We were so we've, close. We went so long.
You know, we've dropped a couple of bombs.
It wouldn't be an episode without at least one.
Without one. We managed to make it over an hour without a major F-bomb.
We have done well.
It is what it is. It happens. You're used to the old podcast where we dropped F-bombs like
we
it was did. Fukushima.
We drank a lot during this podcast.
Oh, wow, that was terrible. We did drink a lot during the podcast. Those were the drunk... That was when... never mind. We will not bring up that.
Nope. No.
No. No, we not on this podcast.
You can't say when in Vegas when you record everything. Oh. It's living out there somewhere.
No, there's one that doesn't live out there anyway.
It doesn't.
It was shot in a field before it ever saw the light
of day. It never saw the light of day.
Oh, wow.
There's actually two that have never seen the light of day.
Well, that sounds like a secret you're taking to the grave.
To the grave.
Yeah. Ben Franklin said three men can keep a secret if two are dead, and I believe that.
Yeah. Everybody needs a Stewie.
So, yeah.
I ain't saying nothing to nobody.
Nobody, yeah. We're leaving that one right where it was. So, Gabe, what about you?
One, I think I had two responses. One response was just to kind of review how the question was framed. Because what it sounded like, just to boil it down, was, hey, I'm somebody who's experiencing mental health issues. Hey, other people who aren't experiencing mental health issues, what has your experience been? And one thing I would suggest is, you know, you never know who is experiencing it. Right. And everyone who experiences mental health issues absolutely probably is or very easily could be part of the support network for other people. So it's not necessarily a clean division of, I've got issues, you don't, what's your experience? You know, I think it's a really messy, blurry, natural mix that you're both. You have issues and you're a support for other people who have issues. And I wouldn't want to frame it anything else because I think that's not genuine. I don't think that's a realistic approach to it. So one is just keeping in mind, like, you never know what other people have,
right,
kind of thing. So, and I say that out of fairness, playing into that idea of, you know, don't suffer, and nobody should suffer in silence and think it's just them. And your support network isn't just, we're not just these clean, free, and I'm just going through my day and with clarity kind of thing. You know, like everybody's got that thing. So not to take away from that, but to try to be fair to all sides and maybe the things we don't know. The other thing I was going to share was a play off of what was said earlier. It was playing off of, because it sounds like both of the other approaches that were shared here was very much wanting deliberately to let you or whoever the person might be to set the pace.
Right.
And I think that makes total sense, and I would suggest that my response is the same. And I think that comes from a very deliberate point of view of it's nobody else's to own. And in my personal history, I tried to own, playing off of the same story, I tried to own Maddox's problems because I thought I could solve them with love or with patience or with being direct. I mean, you name it, I thought I could attempt the solution. And at the end of the day, it wasn't mine to own. And I could, if it was my problem to fix, I would have fixed it. And it was really that simple. And so I say that from two different standpoints. One was for my own survival. I can't take ownership over things that aren't right. mine because I'll just take ownership over everything and, you know, like martyr cycles.
Aren't those fun?
Yay.
They're
not fun. And then the other side of that is if I try to come in from a good point of view to take ownership over other people's problems, I'm taking away from them the opportunity to be empowered and to take ownership over their own things and to set their own pace and to be comfortable in their own space, exploring themselves and reflecting. So I think there's a very valuable component to what was shared, to all of these approaches that were shared earlier. And I think it's they're variations of the same approach, which is to empower you or whoever that person is to be able to set that pace, to empower you or whoever that person is to find the right words, to go through the process of finding those words so that you can define and understand. And I think empowerment is really the word.
Well, and I think that it's...
To clarify, it's not empowerment to be like, I suddenly found the solution. And it's, you know, it's still not going to be an easy process, but to take ownership over that process and to be empowered to figure out however that process might take, however long it might take, and however messy it might need to be.
Empowerment's great, but I was more coming from the standpoint of the problem is, tends to be that people want to fix it for that person.
Right.
Like, they want to come in, they want to, oh, here, do this, let's fix this. And it's not that kind of problem. It's not, here's some directions, here's some parts, put this thing together kind of problem. Sometimes the efforts can come across as it becoming more about them feeling better than it is about actually trying to help the person feel better, because they lose sight that they came over to be helpful in this push, when this person's not ready to be pushed.
Right.
And that's where I think, so yes, I agree. And when I'm saying empowerment, what I'm thinking is keep the focus on that person.
And I think this is a good place for us, because you touched on something really good, and I want to get into that on the next episode, because I want to do ways that we can do more harm than good when it comes, because I think that's important. You know, I feel like we've talked about the ways in which, what do we do as friends of people who are going through these things, and the things that we do well. I think all three of you came up with, like, had really good stuff. But I think we all stumble. And I can tell you that I've stumbled plenty of times in that very thing that you just mentioned, where it stopped being about helping you. It stopped being about helping, and I mean you in the global sense, but became more about, look at me and what I'm doing. I'm helping this person.
Look at me be support. Look at me be an ally. Because
I'm
supportive
and I'm great and this and that. And it isn't a thing that, like, that was done purposely. It was just a thing that, like, it just happens. Especially if you aren't getting what you think is the response that you should get. Because it's not about you.
Why aren't you fixed?
Why aren't you being, you know, do you see all of this stuff I'm doing for you? Why aren't you being fixed?
Why aren't you fixed? Why aren't you better? You know?
And then it becomes less about them and their growth and their progress, and becomes more about you and trying to be the person to fix someone. I want to dig into that next week.
The dangers of fixing.
Right, because there are. I mean,
the hidden dangers. What did you say that show was? The mystery.
Unsolved Mysteries?
Unsolved Mysteries.
The hidden dangers of fixing. So, guys, this was, because, I mean, I would love to keep going, but I do, I said we were going to keep it an hour, and we're past an hour. I know,
we're getting better.
This comes next week. It used to be two. There's an episode that's 3.5 hours out there. But this was a really good conversation. Thank you guys for being open and honest. Thank me for being open and honest.
Yeah. Thank you, Jason.
Because, here's the thing, like, it's getting, I'm having to, not to pat myself on the back, but I'm putting a lot of my shit on the table.
Yeah.
And it is cathartic to get it out. I feel better. Feel kind of the emotional release of once it's all out there and I'm done, it's good. You know, and the other thing is, there could be somebody who's going through this stuff in silence. I said it earlier. And if I can convince them to tell someone that this is a thing that's happening, then I save a life. Because I don't know if I've, I had a friend that committed suicide earlier this year. And all I could think of is, why didn't I know? All of the things that I could have said that I didn't say, or I didn't pick up the phone, and all of that stuff that I just didn't do. They didn't call him to say, hey, Janet Jackson's doing videos for dancers. We should make one. Because that would have been a thing he would have been super excited about. And I just forgot. And then I find out later. I was like, so it's, if I could do something to help someone get the help that they need, then this, all of this is worth it. People telling me that, like, I'm being extra, or I'm being telling on my business, or I'm just looking for attention, and all that stuff is irrelevant if someone listens and says, I got this.
You don't need everyone, you just need one person.
Right.
And there's no need to struggle alone. If you take nothing else from this, don't struggle alone.
My friends ain't gonna let me struggle alone.
They're watching you.
That's true. I am watching.
So, but on that note, before we get into a whole other discussion, Todd, thank you. Gabe, thank you. Todd, Stewie.
I mean, yes, thank you to Todd.
I mean, random straight person. You are sitting in the straight man's chair.
And so it's just
any straight white guy.
That literally is the straight white man's chair. Because that's where Todd sits too.
That's beautiful.
Are you a straight white man?
This is your chair.
Here's your chair. But on behalf of Stewie and Gabe, thank you. Blue, thank you. Guys, this has been another episode of KC Caffeine. We made it 2 years. I don't know how, but we're here. Y'all stay woke and have a good night.